This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:50 right now, you're listening to The Morning Run. In 15 minutes, we've got The Breakfast Grill. And today, we're going to have a panel of guests to discuss the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act, or PCAP, or PCAP, as you call it. PCAP. Yeah, so that was passed in a bid to protect consumers in Malaysia against unreasonable price increases of goods and services following the implementation of GST. But it's left businesses and tax experts in a bit of a puzzle because I think they haven't worked out all the kinks yet. So there's some areas of these regulations that are not quite, that hasn't gone down well with businesses.
Oh, from interpretation perspective, right? Because obviously we've had the GST, which is a bit confusing, to say the least. And then we had the Price Control Act, which was also confusing. And then now you've got the review and, you know, the three-page document, which could have been just been Greek, essentially. So that's even more confusing.
I think GST is confusing for the merchants, not for consumers. They're just slapped with a 6%
tax.
Well, Dr. Vrindajit Singh, he's from Professional Advisory Services at Professional Services Advisory XL Asia. He's going to be on the panel to discuss some of the technicalities of these new PCAP regulations, as well as Dr. Amir Ali Maidin, Managing Director of Maidin. Now, this is really important because Maidin recorded massive losses for the financial year of 2016. This is the first fall that they've recorded in 60 years. And to a large part, there were certain policies that the government had implemented, according to Dr. Amir, that had contributed to the performance.
Can you imagine the Iranian oil crisis, the global financial crisis, the Asian financial crisis did not derail Maidin earnings, but this
60
did.
Years of not
simple decision by the government of Malaysia.
And because when we talked about it with Melissa this morning, I was kind of imagining what Julian would say, because Jules is vehemently and vigorously anti-government tampering with, you know, the normal course of business.
Free
and
market.
This is free markets, essentially. And here we are, right?
Well, I think the government can be in a position to make certain decisions, like regulatory decisions, for the good of Malaysians. But for them to go directly into making pricing decisions, I don't think that's a good thing, because it limits supply. And when you limit supply in the long term, prices go up even more. I mean, supply is restricted. People can't get what they want. And you unofficially push up prices. So I think that the government should stop tinkering around with prices.
But to be fair, the government has a tough role in trying to balance the need to protect Malaysian consumers from profiteering businesses after the GST, and trying to balance getting that right from being conducive for businesses to grow in Malaysia. So that's a tough job.
Well, perhaps it's time to kind of like dip into that 300 billion ringgit or so illicit money that flows out of the country. I mean, you know, our budget is 300 billion ringgit a year, and these huge numbers are bandied around. When we have, as Malaysians, dips into those kind of money, right?
In other words, get your fingers out of that cookie jar and start spending it on where it really matters.
Okay, guys, let's take a look at the local business headlines today. Char Time, a former Char Time master franchise for Malaysia, Loop Holdings, they have refuted all allegations made by La Caffa International of Taiwan last Friday. Loop CEO Brian Liu stressed that the allegations that raw materials were used that were not approved as part of the recipes may give rise to the misimpression that there was compromise the quality of Char Time products here in Malaysia. In fact, here is Brian Liu himself refuting those allegations.
They can claim everything. They can claim the unapproved ingredient. All this is all subjected to the localization. Because the moment we do our Horlicks, we do our Hershey chocolate, they sign a warning letter. This localization is to make a brand become a household brand. When you look at the history of Char Time, we have been localizing the product for the past 5 years. If they are not happy, they should sound at an early stage. Not until today, they terminate us and bring back the old stories.
That was Brian Liu, CEO of Lube, the former Char Time master franchise in Malaysia. Now, this spat has been going on for quite a while, and it's a really public one with, I think, you know, lots of people. I think lots of people can argue on both sides of the divide.
Yeah, all the recriminations are flying around, stemming from the cancellation of the master franchisee. I think that Char Time Malaysia, Brian Liu, has done very well in establishing the brand and the sales growth in Malaysia, because Malaysia Char Time contributes more than half of a global Char Time sales. So, you know, somebody must have seen the numbers and saying, this is really lucrative. We got to
exactly. What went through my mind, Jules, because what could have precipitated this spat and this very public spat? You know, why would you dent your cash cow, essentially, unless maybe you wanted some of that pie yourself?
Apparently, this is such a common thing. You know,
I've heard
stories of other franchise agreements where after the franchisee has done well, the master over there, master overlord over there in other countries, come and take back the local franchise business. And this raises the question of how watertight the franchise agreements are, because it has to protect the rights of both parties, both the master franchisor and the franchisee, right? But of course, Char Time at its inception and Char Time today are totally different animals. Like, who would have thought that Char Time would be so successful?
Do
you guys go and get your cuppa every time?
I've tried once.
You're obviously not contributing to the 50%.
I tried a jaga badan lah.
Oh, sorry.
But it was quite sensational.
It shows.
Okay, well, let's move on. Grab Bike regional head has said the e-hailing company will evaluate various factors before deciding whether to introduce its two-wheeler services in any new market. So at the moment, they're still evaluating the relevance of Grab Bike in certain areas. The company hopefully plans to launch a new feature this month as it seeks to extend its services. This is after they introduce the six-seater Grab car platform.
I think this is kind of like the high-level, tuk-tuk of Malaysia, isn't it? Because essentially, that's what it is.
It's
right?
Like Gojek, right?
Yeah, it's a bit like Gojek. I think it'd be great.
At first, I thought it would be a no-brainer, a natural progression from
given the traffic
taxis
congestion
to cars to motorbikes, right?
Yeah.
But then we still have to worry about the security situation. And
what do you mean, security?
Well, would you take a taxi ride on a bike? Would that be dangerous for you?
Well, when you go to Bangkok, do you go to use it in a tuk-tuk? Because it's essentially what it is.
What are accident rates in Bangkok? I don't know, but the accident rates in Malaysia here seems to be high. I mean, I don't have the numbers here, but we just feel that it's high, right? So you gotta think twice about security and safety.
But I do think there is a segment of market that will be well served by this. I mean, we recently reported about Dago Ride. Remember, they wanted to come in, and not only did they want to serve the market of, say, the bottom 40, but they also wanted to provide employment for the bottom 40. And that, I think, that was a really good kind of social cause. But also, there will be a niche that wants this.
Absolutely. Business will find a way. If there's a buck to be made, you can be sure an entrepreneur is going to be there.
There's that career service option as well.
I mean, the bike,
instead, not only transporting passengers, but transporting goods as well.
That's right.
Yeah, you can carry people and packages. It's a bit like shampoo and conditioner, two in one.
Okay. Kip REIT has ended its maiden trading day yesterday, half a cent lower at 99.5 cents versus the IPO price of ringgit per unit. Now, after the listing ceremony yesterday, Kip REIT opened at ringgit 4 cents. That was a 4% premium above its offer price, but then subsequently the counter declined.
I think this is how it should be. This is a testament of an IPO priced correctly, right? No crazy rises on the first day, because otherwise it's going to be a lottery system for the original owners, the cornerstones, what have you, the interested first-time owners. IPO is like a lottery game. Contrast that to Serba Dynamic, who was on a grill recently, and this is an oil and gas service company. No Saudi Aramco, but still a very good business model. $45 million announcement of quarterly profit ahead of their listing. Now, they
Ringgit. I think they would love it to be.
Ringgit, yeah. Sorry, ringgit.
They would love it to be dollars.
They were, I think, listed at around the 140, I think 140 odd level, but RHB, which is one of the principal joint advisors, have valued the company at over two ringgit, 210 to 55. So you can expect that on the first day of trading, this would really jump up crazily. But this is really unfair, an unfair advantage to the people who got the first leg in.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Okay, we've got the Breakfast Grill coming up just after the 8 o'clock news. So stay tuned for our panel on the Price Control and Anti-Profiteering Act right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.